Hello again, and welcome to Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Lita.
And I'm Jean Marie.
I'm sure I'll be able to talk today.
Mm-hmm.
Today we're talking about how cancer care is changing and changing fast. This episode is called Cancer Care in Transition, Precision Medicine, Immunotherapy, and Patient Choice. We'll break down what precision medicine really means in plain language, what immunotherapy is and isn't, what new treatments and blood-based screenings are on the horizon, and how all of this affects the choices that patients and families are asked to make.
Sure. Let's get started with the big picture. Why does cancer care feel so different now compared to, say, 20 years ago?
Well, two big reasons.
Okay.
First, we understand cancer biology much better. We can see the genetic changes and immune system tricks that help cancer grow. Second, we have new tools like precision medicine, immunotherapy, and now multi-cancer blood tests that target those changes or pick up signals of cancer in ways that we just couldn't before.
And that doesn't mean that chemotherapy or radiation therapy are gone. They're still very important, but more and more they are being combined with, or in some cases guided by, treatments matched to the specific cancer tumor or the specific patient and their overall health.
And that's where the patient choice really comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of one standard plan, mm-hmm. people now face several reasonable options, each with different side effects, different schedules, and long-term trade-offs.
Well, let's unpack precision medicine first. The term gets thrown about a lot. I hear it every day. What does it actually mean?
In cancer, precision medicine usually means using biomarker testing, either tests on the tumor or sometimes the blood, to look for specific genetic changes or proteins that drive that cancer's growth. Those biomarkers can help doctors choose a treatment that targets the cancer's particular weaknesses, rather than using a one-size-fits-all approach.
For example, some lung cancers have changes in the genes like EGFR or ALK, and we now have medications specifically to target those altered proteins. In breast cancer, tumors might be HER2 positive or hormone receptor positive, and that can guide targeted and hormonal therapies.
To figure this out, doctors can do biomarker testing on a biopsy sample, or in some cases, a liquid biopsy, a blood test that looks for tumor DNA or other markers in the bloodstream. The goal is to match the right person to the right drug at the right time, and sometimes to avoid drugs that are unlikely to help.
I also think it's important to say that what precision medicine is not, because expectations can really be high.
Right. Precision medicine is not a guarantee of a cure. It's not available or useful for every cancer yet. Sometimes testing doesn't find any actionable mutations, or the best matched drug still only helps for a limited time.
While biomarker testing is becoming more common, access is still uneven. So not every patient gets comprehensive testing, and insurance coverage may vary.
There's also a time factor. Waiting for test results can feel agonizing when you know there's a cancer in your body. Patients are often weighing, do we wait for more information or do we just start a more standard treatment now? That's a real shared decision moment.
And let's shift on to immunotherapy. People hear that word and sometimes think this is like a magical cure. But what exactly is immunotherapy when treating cancer?
Immunotherapy means treatments that help the immune system recognize and attack cancer. Cancers can often hide by putting up a don't attack me signal, or by exhausting the immune cells that should be fighting them.
And some of the more well-known immunotherapies right now are checkpoint inhibitors, medications that block proteins like, well, I mean, there's
PD-1, PD-L1, CTLA-4.
Right. And so it acts like, which act like brakes on T cells.
And we know that T cells are important. We talked about that.
Yep. Not today, but when you release those brakes, T cells can sometimes wake back up and start to attack the cancer tumor or the cancer growth.
There's also CAR T cell therapy, mostly used for some leukemias.
And that is different than CAR D B. Sorry.
Yeah, okay. Boy, oh boy. We needed a ba-dum bump on that one.
Yeah.
Mostly used for some leukemias and lymphomas.
Right now.
Right now, okay. Yep. Doctors take a patient's own T cells, reprogram them in a lab to recognize a target on cancer cells, grow them, and then infuse them back. It can lead to dramatic remissions in some people, but it's complex, it's invasive, and it's not without serious risk.
Immunotherapy sounds amazing on paper, your own immune system fighting back, but what are some of the real-world pros and cons here?
Well, on the plus side, some patients who had very limited options have had long-lasting responses with the checkpoint inhibitors, or CAR-T, especially in melanoma, lung cancer, and some blood cancers, and a growing list of others. But immunotherapy can also cause immune-related side effects, because once the brakes are off, the immune system can attack healthy organs too. That can lead to inflammation in the skin, colon, lungs, liver, thyroid, or other glands, sometimes requiring steroids or other immune-suppressing treatment.
So instead of the classic chemotherapy-type side effects, like hair loss or low blood counts, those can still happen. But we might also see things that look more like an autoimmune disease or an autoimmune condition.
And not everybody responds. Some tumors remain cold, meaning the immune system doesn't get fully engaged, even with immunotherapy. So researchers are looking for combinations and new targets to change that.
And let's talk about some of the emerging treatments listeners might want to start looking for, and they might start hearing about.
Well, one big category is bispecific antibodies, BI, not B-Y-E,
go out and purchase.
BUI. Okay, anyway. Engineered antibodies that can grab a cancer cell with one arm and an immune cell, often a T cell, with the other. And by physically bringing them together, they can help the immune system attack more specifically. Okay. And there are already approved bispecifics in some blood cancers, with more in trials for solid tumors.
Another area is personalized cancer vaccines, especially neoantigen vaccines, and these are built from mutations that are unique to an individual's cancer and or cancer tumor. The idea is to create a vaccine, often using mRNA or DNA, that trains the immune system to recognize those specific tumor markers and attack.
Early studies in melanoma and some other aggressive cancers have shown promising immune responses and hints of better outcomes when these vaccines are combined with checkpoint inhibitors. It's still early, but it's one of the areas experts are most excited about.
And then there are
Oncolytic.
Okay. Modified viruses that selectively infect and kill cancer cells and also stimulate the individual's own immune response. And one such therapy is already approved for certain melanomas, and trials are exploring different viruses and combinations across multiple cancer types.
And don't forget about the antibody drug conjugate. Or ADCs, antibodies that act like homing devices, delivering a chemo payload directly to the cancer cells while ideally sparing more healthy tissue. We're seeing new ADCs approved in breast, lung, bladder, and other cancers, and more are on their way.
And we've been talking about treating cancer once it's diagnosed. But there's also a huge push to finding cancers as early as possible. So sometimes before symptoms even begin. That's where there are the new multi-cancer blood tests are coming in.
Well, traditional screening focuses on a few cancers, like mammograms for breast cancer. And yes, men can get breast cancer. Colonoscopy or stool tests for colon cancer. Pap smears for cervical cancer. Low-dose CT for some people at high risk for lung cancer. But most cancer deaths come from cancers that don't have routine screening tests, which is why researchers are exploring blood-based tests that look for signals of many cancers at once.
And there are a few different approaches. Some tests, like the Galleri, look at cell-free DNA in the blood, tiny fragments of DNA shed by cells, and analyze patterns of DNA myelation to see whether a cancer signal is present, and if so, where it might be coming from. Others, proteomics-based tests, recently reported in BMJ Oncology, measure panels of proteins in the blood and use machine learning to distinguish cancer from non-cancer and predict the tissue of origin.
In that proteomics study, researchers measured more than 3,000 proteins in plasma, then narrowed it down to a sex-specific panel that could detect 18 different early-stage solid tumors with high accuracy and identify where they started. The authors of the study reported that at very high specificity, hard with no teeth, meaning very few false positives, their test had higher sensitivity for early-stage cancers than some existing multi-cancer blood tests.
Right. And similarly, Galleri and related tests in large studies like Pathfinder have shown they can detect signals from over 50 types of cancer and often correctly predict the origin where the cancer is likely located with relatively low false positive rates.
That's amazing. But here's the important part. These tests are not replacements for standard screening like mammograms and colonoscopies. They're still being evaluated, and most guidelines view them as adjuncts that might be added on top of existing screening for certain higher risk or well-counseled populations. They can lead to diagnostic workups if a signal is detected, which may or may not reveal a cancer. So understanding benefits and downstream testing is key.
I know I was just reading an article, and I wish I knew where the article was from, about individuals in, I want to say, New Zealand. And it was a family that kept having family members pass away from stomach cancer. And they finally said, you know what, we need to find out what's going on here. So they volunteered to be part of a study and actually isolated the gene mutation and have made like huge strides because they took a really active role. And have found, you know, some ways, some unusual ways to prevent and treat the cancer. But really, I mean, taking an active role and getting the tests done and participating in studies like that can be...
Yeah, sometimes that's the only way research can expand.
So if you're hearing about a simple blood test that can detect dozens of cancers, it's okay to be interested and curious about that. But it's just as important to talk with your clinician or other healthcare provider about where the science is, if it's suited for you, and if it exists or how it will exist or fit in with your traditional screenings.
Okay. Well, that's good questions. Or good points.
Okay. Well, why don't, what are some questions that you could ask your healthcare provider?
Yeah, that's what I wanted to say.
Okay.
Is a multi-cancer blood test appropriate for someone like me? What do we know about false positives and false negatives? If a cancer signal is found, what test would I need next and who would coordinate that?
And would it be covered by, the insurance?
Right. These are exciting tools, but they're still in transition from research to routine care.
And all of this sounds like, you know, very powerful, but it also means that instead of one standard path that there are, that many patients are now have multiple complicated options. So how does this affect patient choice?
It raises the stakes on shared decision-making in oncology. Doctors may lay out chemo, targeted therapy, immunotherapy, combinations, clinical trials, or even multi-cancer screening, each with different timelines, side effects, and goals. Patients and families are being asked to weigh questions like, do I prioritize length of life, quality of life, or a balance? How much risk am I comfortable with for a small chance of a big benefit? And do I want to add newer screening tests now, knowing that they may not be standard yet?
Yeah, and in the case of, I believe, the families in New Zealand, many have chosen to have their stomachs removed.
Oh, okay.
Just like some women choose to have, or some individuals choose to have breast tissue removed when they find out that they're
higher risk. Yeah.
And there's just a lot of patient choice and being informed and getting all the options and consulting healthcare providers who you feel comfortable with and who you feel are informed and can help support your decision. It's vital. And it's a lot to carry, especially when you're scared or you're not feeling at your best. Decisional aides, nurse navigators, and even social workers can help make decisions. They can't help me get through the sentence. But not everyone has access to all of those supports.
Well, in a perfect world, mm-hmm. every patient would get clear explanations in plain language, mm-hmm. time to think and ask questions, honest discussion of uncertainty, what we know, what we don't know, support in aligning treatment and screening with their values and life circumstances.
And let's talk about some more specific questions that you can take if you are facing a cancer diagnosis and you are meeting with your oncology team.
If you've just been diagnosed, you might ask, has my tumor been tested for biomarkers or genetic changes that could affect my treatment? Mm-hmm. You could also ask, are there targeted therapies or immunotherapies available for my type of cancer? Or would you recommend any clinical trials for someone in my situation?
And if you're considering immunotherapy, you might want to ask, what are the potential benefits for someone like me? What side effects would I need to watch out for? And who do I call if I notice them? And what do I need to do? And what are the, you know, what are the treatments for those side effects? Or preventative treatments for those side effects? And if the treatment doesn't work, what are my next options or what other options are available to me?
Yeah, good questions. And if you're curious about blood-based screening tests, you could ask, do you offer any multi-cancer early detection blood tests here? Or how strong is the evidence for using them in someone my age and risk level? And lastly, how would an abnormal result change what we do next?
And something that comes up a lot in cancer care is balancing hope and realism. How do all these new tools affect that balance?
These treatments and tests absolutely bring real hope. Mm-hmm. Stories of people living many years with stage 4 cancers that used to be quickly fatal, and of cancers possibly being caught earlier through blood tests, are no longer rare. But they can also create pressure. Patients may feel like they're failing if a promising treatment or test doesn't give the result that they're hoped for.
And sometimes the way new treatments and tests are covered in the media doesn't help. Headlines might sound like, you know, there's a new breakthrough when the actual benefit is more modest or it only applies to a small group. So, you know, take everything.
Grain of salt.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, one helpful approach is to mm-hmm. ask your team for numbers in context, like how many people like me benefit from this treatment or screening test? Mm-hmm. Or what does benefit mean? Is it tumor shrinkage? Is it slower growth? Are there fewer deaths? Or are there fewer late-stage diagnoses? Also, you could ask, what are the realistic best case, typical, and worst case scenarios. It's okay to hope for the best while also planning for other possibilities.
Sure. And we also have to talk about equity. Who actually has access to precision medicine, advanced immunotherapies, and experimental screening tests?
Studies show that access can differ by race, income, geography, and even which hospital or clinic you go to. Damn shame.
Mm-hmm.
People treated in large academic centers or comprehensive cancer centers are more likely to get full biomarker testing, advanced immunotherapy options, and offers to join trials for multi-cancer blood tests compared to those in smaller or under-resourced settings.
Unfortunately, language barriers, insurance issues, transportation issues, and a historical mistrust of healthcare providers can also play a role.
But patients can't fix that on their own.
No.
But you could ask, have I had all the standard biomarker tests for my type and stage of cancer? If not, why? Is there a cancer center or specialist that you would recommend for a second opinion? And if you're considering a multi-cancer blood test, ask how it's being used in your health system and whether there are research studies that you could join rather than paying out of pocket without clear guidance.
And if someone listening is in the middle of all this, the tests, the new terms, the big decisions, what would you want them to hear?
Well, first, that feeling overwhelmed is completely understandable. You do not have to absorb everything in one visit. It's okay to bring someone to appointments with you to take notes. Ask for written summaries or patient-friendly handouts. Request another visit focused just on your questions and decisions.
And you might also want to remember that it's okay to say, I need time to think. And you want a healthcare provider that's going to support this and be there. In many situations, you have at least a little time to consider your options. There are some cases where you will unfortunately need to make quick decisions, and maybe, you know, hopefully you'll have time to talk things over with your loved ones or to seek a second opinion.
Yeah. We know somebody that was in that position.
Right around the holidays. And
yeah,
they had to make a very, very quick decision that was going to be life-changing, but also life-saving.
Right.
And I can't even imagine.
Well, your values matter. It's not selfish to factor in your family, your work, your faith, your fears, and your hopes. Modern cancer care isn't just about killing cancer cells. It's about supporting you as a whole person.
We hope that this episode has made some of these ideas like precision medicine, immunotherapy, and blood-based cancer screenings feel a little bit more understandable, and that it gave you some of the language and ability to use these terms with someone you love who is facing these choices, or with your healthcare provider if it's you that's facing these possible treatment options.
Cancer care is in transition. There are more options than ever before, and that's both exciting and overwhelming. You deserve clear information, honest conversations, and a real seat at the table when decisions are made. This podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment, and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard on this podcast. Till next week.